Greg Jenkins, thank you so much for being here.
It is my pleasure.
So Greg used to work at Infusionsoft. He's been out on his own running Monkey Pod Marketing for the last couple of years. He's one of the best respected people in the email marketing space. And I love him partly because he's super lovable, but also because we have a very similar vibe. Like, we both really believe in really conversational, straightforward copy. We both believe in being, you know, fairly lighthearted and good humored about things. Like, we try not to take things super seriously or have things be really super hypey and, you know, you have to click here now or you'll die. We try to avoid.
Yeah, that actually nauseates me just a little.
I know, right? All that, like, you're missing out and I'm so disappointed you haven't taken advantage of this offer. It's like, really? That's just yucky. And have managed to build really successful businesses using only follow-up. I don't know about you, Greg, but all I do is email. That's it. That's my whole marketing plan is email. So all I ever do is follow up with people.
I run some Facebook ads as well, but the 90% of my business and the relationships that I've built is through email.
Yeah. Yeah. So I think it's just the cheapest, easiest, best way to follow up with people. So we're going to be talking predominantly about email, but there are other ways to follow up. We'll talk about some of those too. As usual, you guys submitted a raft of amazing questions. So insightful, so heartfelt, so
sincere.
So serious-minded.
I was really, really impressed at the depth and the varying levels of these questions and the different angles, the variety of them. It's clear that this is a pain point that I think a lot of people either have struggled with or didn't know that they had an appetite for.
Yeah, I have to say this has been, you know, I do these free expert calls once a month. This is sort of a bonus one because we've got a fifth Thursday in August. But this is one of the highest registered. More people registered for this one than for other ones, which surprised me. I didn't realize, like you said, that there was this much hunger for this information. So what we're going to do, you guys, is if you're on the webcast, you can see Greg's got a free ebook you can opt in for, which you absolutely want, The Nature of Nurture. And then you'll be on Greg's list and you can see how he follows up with people. But now let's talk nurture. Greg, lay it out for us. What's your philosophy? What are we looking at here?
Yeah, so let me explain, I guess, let me back up to, like, my relationship with the concept of nurture, because I think that the way that it has evolved in terms of how I look at it may be useful for anyone listening in terms of how they think about it and the role that it could play for their business. So I was first introduced to marketing and automation when I started at Infusionsoft, and it all seemed technical and abstract, and it's an interesting thing for me to admit, because I work in the email marketing space, and as Sam said, that's kind of my my MO. That's where people know me. But it wasn't always that way. My first business didn't even have a website, and I was kind of proud of that. I didn't see the role it would play. So the idea of email marketing was a tough pill for me to swallow until I was presented with the idea of life cycle marketing, and life cycle marketing is just a term that means it's the customer experience that you have created, right? It's about accounting for every step in your customer's journey, and you know, those big milestones are usually pretty obvious. It's the first time somebody interacts with you or you know, finds your brand. It's the first time that they reach out and make contact and ask you a question about what you do or about your art or your service or whatever it is that you have. And then it's the point of transaction if they decide to, you know, become a customer or a member or a subscriber. And then it's everything after that. It's how you treat them and make them feel. And so there's these big milestones. And what I was most what I connected with most earliest in that conversation was the idea of nurture, because it's not just a step in that process. it is the process, right? If you think of those big milestones as being these lily pads, right, that you want your people, your tribe to jump from one to the next, right? Nurture is the force that ties them all together. It's the bridge that helps, you know, pave their actual path. And it's the safety net if they slip between the cracks, right? I saw in some of the questions that came in, traffic's not something I struggle with. I have traffic, but it's what happens to the people who are you know, in my system, and I don't follow up with them, and they disappear, and I never hear from them. Well, the answer to that and so many other questions is nurture. And so that's how I have learned to think about it, is it's not just a lever you go and pull when people hit a certain part in their customer journey. It is the fabric that ties it all together. And that's, I think, why nurture is so powerful, is because it permeates the entire customer experience that you're creating, whether it's something you've designed or something that just exists. The whole process is nurture. The only question is whether or not you're being intentional or you know, strategic about how you do it.
Exactly. I love that. So, you know, this answer sort of covers a lot of the questions we got. Gosh, you could just practically feel the anxiety leaping off the question, you know, like, well, what do I say, and how do I not feel stalky or desperate or needy or weird or pesky? You know, how do I not seem like it's transactional or like I want something from them? How do I stay interesting? How often is too often? Like, all of, and we'll answer, there's some real answers to some of those questions. But overall, this, what I get is this feeling of anxiety and this feeling of like, what if I do it wrong? And the understanding to like, take a breath, understand that it's the entire process of getting to know someone and letting them get to know you. And it's a conversation, right? It's always going to feel weird if you feel like you're just standing there knocking on their door and yelling at them. You know, of course that's going to feel weird. Don't do that.
Go ahead.
Yeah, just think of it as getting to know someone in the same way that you would get to know anyone, and think of it as a conversation. They're getting to know you, you're getting to know them. It's not just a one-way thing.
The biggest distinction, right, it is a conversation, but obviously it's happening in sort of an alternative medium, right? Instead of sitting down in a coffee shop or at a bar, you know, it's happening back and forth in your inbox over time or, you know, in some other channel. And so the biggest, I think, difference between any relationship and specifically a nurturing one with your audience, with your list, with your prospects, is the expectations that you set, right? If we sit down for coffee, we both know that this is going to be, you know, an hour or two, and that we're going to probably have coffee and maybe, you know, a pastry, and like you have a general idea of what that means. But when somebody opts in for something, it oftentimes means something different to you than it means to them. And so I find that a lot of the ambiguity, a lot of the anxiety around nurture can be resolved just by telling people, hey, here's what I expect from this. Is that what you want also? And I, you know, I'm not perfect in any, well, I mean, maybe my beard is close, but I'm not perfect in any sense of the word. What I do is I tell people straight up, you know, up front, here's how I want this to look. If you ask for this, you're going to receive X, Y, and Z. Or at the end of, you know, if you ask for something and I deliver that something before I give you anything else, I like to check and say, is this okay with you? I actually tell people it's like a pen pal relationship. We'll be pen pals, except for you don't have to do any of the work. Unless you want to, right? I welcome people to reply, but you certainly don't want to give your audience chores, you know. What you want to do is genuinely provide value for them and show up in a way that makes their life better.
So I think this is really important to when people opt into your list you know, start to interact with you, to do exactly what Greg's saying, just set the premise. Like, great, I'm so glad you've joined my list, right? You really want to thank them and welcome them. You can't make people feel too good about the decision to participate in whatever it is you're up to with you, right? So we welcome
totally.
Them. We make a big deal about the fact that we're there. We also remind them that they've done it, because honestly, people opt in for stuff all the time, and I think you've got about 12 hours before they forget that they've ever done anything. And then they're like, it's spam. Who are you? I hate you. You know, so we want to get back to them right away and say, yay, you're on my list. This is so great. I'm so glad. Here's the thing you opted in for, or here's the, you know, free recording or the ebook or the whatever. And from here on in, you can expect to hear from me, you know, once a week with my Love and Mondays newsletter, or with my, you know, you'll hear from me occasionally, or you'll hear from me more around the holidays and less in the summer, or what, or I like to, or email every day. I mean, I've got a couple of 365 step follow up sequences where people get an email from me every day, a little bit of inspiration. And once people know what that is, you can also set that up in your unsubscribe link down at the bottom of your emails. I have an option called some subscribe, which is here for me less off, you know, only occasionally or with big news, right? So that means if I'm sending out something about a workshop or something like this call with you, Greg, I'll send it out once to everybody, and then from the and then from then on, I won't send it again to the some subscribes, like, because they don't want to hear from me. So there's ways with the technology that you can help people manage their own inbox in that way.
Yeah, and I think this also starts to speak to there were a couple of concerns about, you know, how regularly should I reach out, right? And how frequently is it okay to contact people without sounding pesky or desperate, right? And the reality is it's not about the pace or the cadence so much as it is about what you have to say. And and how closely it aligns with the expectation that you set. If you make my life better, you can email me every day, and I'll never get sick of it because it's making my life better, right? If people genuinely want to hear what you have to say, then they're going to say, hey, I have this appetite, feed me. The only time it starts to sound desperate or pushy is when you're emailing to be self-serving. To say, hey, are you ready to buy something? You know, do you have your credit card out? And I think that's what people are afraid of. Nobody, that doesn't feel good for either party. And so it just boils down to, you can contact me as frequently as you have value. And then it begs the question, so what of value do we have? And that's where the fun starts. You know, this is what we're great at.
Exactly, especially for this crowd. I mean, you guys are so intensely creative. You're such good thinkers. You're such interesting. You have such interesting perspectives on the world. I don't think any of you really struggle with content. We did get some questions of like, well, what do I say, or how do I say it, or you know, what tone should I use? And really, I think for you all, particularly, this is the least of your worries. I think that you all are so expert in whatever your field of study is, and that expert not meaning that you know everything about everything, but you know what you know. You've had the experiences you've had, and you understand the people that you're talking to pretty well. So just your natural empathy leads you to do that. So here's the easiest way I can tell you of what to say when you're emailing. Talk to them about them. Talk to them about the problems they have. Talk to them about what's keeping them up at night. Talk to them about the frustrations they have. Talk to them about the things they want to celebrate, the things they want to stop and enjoy, you know, and whether that's a recipe for vichyssoise, or I just made vichyssoise last night. It was delish. Or, you know, a new way to apply eyeshadow, or a better way to talk to your teenager, or, you know, a more healthful way to, you know, Greg's got celiac, you know, like different ways of eating to be healthier, you know, whatever it is, be communicating with them about them. And you guys saw on my opt-in forms, I almost always ask a question, and those questions are gold because they tell me where your mind is and where your heart is and what language are you using. So I just turn that right back around. Right? I'm saying, here's what we're going to talk about. Here's, and you go, oh, that's so interesting. That's just what I'm interested in. I'm like, I know, because you told me. Right? And
let me add
so important.
let me add an unconventional piece of advice here. I wish this is advice for me as much as it is for anyone else, but give yourself permission to be a little less humble. And what I mean by that is we all, I think, have we're too close to our expertise, and what happens is we end up devaluing it. We forget that the things that we know and the things that we do are unique and are special and are valuable because we do it every single day and we live with it. And so you sort of forget that this is something that there are people that for whom it would blow their minds, and all we need to do is share it. And and so when you think about like who your audience is, and don't try to take that from them. Just share it and let them value it in whatever way it shows up for them. That's something that I forget that the things that I do to the right person feel magical. And the same thing is true for Sam, and it's true for probably all of you. It's just a matter of giving yourself permission to be a little less humble.
That's right. That's right. The things that seem really obvious and dumb to you are a big news flash to everybody else. So, yeah, absolutely. So that's some about what to say. We got some questions about how often. Here's what I usually say about frequency of email. When somebody first opts into my list, I like to do the Fibonacci numbers, right? So they get an email on day 0, day 1, day 2, day 3, day 5, day 8, day 13, day 21, and then they're into my regular nurture sequence, which goes on for like 8 months or something, because every time I write something cool, I add it to the end. And then they just hear from me however once a week or so. And I would recommend after that basically emailing people once a week. That's my standard advice.
Yeah, and the only caveat or the only addition I'll make to Sam's advice there is you don't have to have all of that ready in order to start. If the idea of having an email on day 1, an email on day 2, an email on day 4, so I forget the numbers that you used already, and that shows you how well I know the Fibonacci sequence. But if the idea of having all of that prepared feels intimidating or feels overwhelming, just focus on one, right? You have to start somewhere. And if you have a kick-ass welcome email, if your initial point of contact really is on brand and it is your voice and it loves all up on them, that's all you need to start. And then the beauty is once you've begun, you get to build on that over time. You don't have to have it all ready in order to launch. I did a presentation the other day and I used a quote that I had never said before. Launched doesn't mean finished. Right? It just means that you can start learning from it. It's there's something liberating about getting your first version live. So if the idea of having all of that content up front feels intimidating, set that aside. I won't permit you to use that as an obstacle.
Exactly. And is it Mark Mullenweg who created WordPress? He's got a great quote around how if you're not,
I'm not sure.
a little bit embarrassed, if you're not at least a little bit embarrassed when you launch, you've waited too long.
I have heard that. Yeah, I have heard that. Yep.
Right.
Or if you wait until it's perfect, you'll never stop waiting.
That's right.
Yeah.
So, yeah. And you don't know. I mean, I didn't know that I was going to, make a fortune emailing poems, for God's sake. I wrote the first poem and sent it out to a few friends who seemed to like it. And then I was like, oh, well, maybe I'll send it to my list. I sent it to my list, which at the time was only a couple hundred people, and got this like avalanche of response. And I was like, oh, well, that worked. But I didn't know it was going to work ahead of time. I just did it because it sort of seemed fun. And now it's like my thing. Now it's the thing that I'm known for. I built a 6-figure business off of poetry, people. So you can do it too. Another question. Somebody said the slides aren't showing. Let me just tell you guys there are no slides. So if you're not seeing slides, that's because there aren't any.
Sam and I are using.
We're
using verbal slides. They're audio slides, so yeah.
Well, also, I want you guys making notes on your own. I want you doodling and doing the images that are going to be significant to you, because that's how you're going to learn, right? That's how you're going to start to understand this. So the what sequence, what I was talking about in terms of the frequency of initial emails is the Fibonacci sequence. Fibonacci is one of those, Leonardo Fibonacci was a great mathematician, but, and the Fibonacci sequence is the numbers, the next number is the sum of the previous two numbers, right? So 0, 1, yeah. 2, 3, 5, 3 and 5 is 8, 5 and 8 is 13,
yeah.
Right? 21. So that's the Fibonacci sequence. And I only use it because it is a naturally occurring series of numbers. There's numbers that occur in nature, like the golden mean, like pi, like what's the one I'm thinking of? And so I just, you know, it's not right or wrong. It's just something I decided and I thought was kind of cool. So, but you know, do what works for you. Experiment.
Hey, Sam. I want to address specifically a question that came in ahead of time from Devin. It's how do I keep it fresh? I can only send so many checking in emails before I feel like a broken record. How do I excite or intrigue people? And we talked a little bit about this, but I want to get real specific because I know some people want an actual list that they can work off of. And so here are a handful of ideas for things that you can share that your audience and your list and whoever these people are may very well appreciate without having to come up with something unique each time, right? Number one is testimonials from people you have worked with or people who have purchased from you or people who have experienced whatever it is that you are great at. This is the whole reason that like tools like Yelp exist, right? Is social proof. It's one of the principles from Robert Cialdini's book, Influence, the Principles of Persuasion. And it's all about showing people that somebody who is like them has already made this choice and here's how it turned out for them. And so the reason that that is valuable is because it lends credibility to what it is that you do, but it also helps that person know, you know, this isn't Greg being salesy. This is somebody who Greg has worked with, who has taken the time to give him a testimonial or a case study, and hopefully it sets their mind at ease as to what working with you or what, you know, purchasing from you or being a member of yours would look like. So that's a big one that I think people undervalue or underestimate. You may have testimonials on your website, but it doesn't occur to us to go serve those up to people, right? We put them there in sort of a passive way, and we hope somebody trips over them and takes the time to read it. But sometimes it's worth it to just be proactive and say, hey, at this point, you may be wondering, you know, what it's like. Well, I can tell you all about it, but let me let my homegirl Sam do it instead, right? So testimonials is a big one. I also think that we as entrepreneurs, as creators, as business owners, we put too much pressure on ourselves to come up with something unique and organic every single time. And I want to give you permission to recycle. If you've created blog posts or YouTube videos or anything in the past, that doesn't mean that it has immediately become obsolete after you published it, right? A lot of times you're sitting on a treasure trove of valuable content, and you just have to repurpose it. You have to relaunch it. You have to include it in your drip and your nurture. When I have an active blog covering Infusionsoft topics and tricks and hacks, and I pay attention to which of my videos get the most watches and which of my posts get the most comments. And then you better believe that those same posts make it into my nurture process, because I announce it to my blog subscribers when that post goes live. But if somebody signs up for my blog 6 months later or a year later, they may never go back and dig through the stuff that I have. But if it's in my nurture process, I know that 6 months after they sign up for that, they're going to get, hey, here's a few highlights from the blog. And so you may have a body of work that you can access and repurpose. And if you have a handful of those, you've got your first couple months of nurture built out. The third or the next one would be, it's in that same vein, but if you do a podcast, right, for example, Maybe you transcribe that podcast into a blog post. Maybe you break the if it's 3 points to X, Y, or Z, or 5 ways to do this other thing. You could break those into an email series with each point being separate, right? If you anytime you have a conversation and you get done with it and you think, man, I wish more people would have heard that, that's it should be a little visual pin for the real life Pinterest board of content creation that you should circle back to and dissect that and find alternative mediums to publish that through. So that's all. I think that we frame it up in our minds that creating all this content is going to be a little harder than it actually needs to be. And I think content creation is sort of a muscle that once you develop it builds and it gets stronger.
Definitely. And you're absolutely right about recycling thing. I mean, I'm on Greg's list and I open and read everything he sends. And so often, like, I know that you've done this, you know, thing about how to, you know, do this little trick in a campaign. And I may have seen it 3 months ago, but I probably didn't watch it then. So I'm like, oh, that's right. I wanted to watch that. Right. And this is really the heart of follow-up and why it's so important to keep following up with people is because, as all of you, I'm sure, have noticed, people don't buy when you are ready for them to buy. They buy when they are ready to buy. So let's see. What else? Kristen asked about email templates. Absolutely. If you've got I know this is true for all of you, whether or not you're using an actual email follow-up system like a CRM, a customer relationship management tool like Infusionsoft or Entreport or ActiveCampaign or whatever, or MailChimp, or it's just you and your Gmail account, you know, wherever stage you're at, you definitely have emails that you send over and over again, right? You've got questions that people are asking you. You've got, you know, here's how to work with me, or here's how to find my office, or here's how to pay me, or here's whatever it is. Absolutely write those templates out. Really spend a little time making them say just what you want, and then reuse those, repurpose them over and over again. Save yourself some time. You know, our friend Tyler says anything you do more than twice, you should systematize. So, and it really answers that question of like, oh, I don't know what to say. No, I know what to say. I'm going to send them the thing I always send people when I first meet
them.
Well,
let me give you permission here. If you're on my list or if you signed up for that ebook, you will get nurture and you will get follow up from me, and you have my permission to take it. If something I write or something I say or that style connects with you, obviously, you know, your business is different than mine and the thing that you offer is different than what I offer. But that's just that's the details, right? The structure of it and the way that it makes you feel, you can take that. And the reason I say that is because the best templates in the world are in your inbox somewhere. They're things that have been sent to you that compel you to action. I'm a kind of a marketing junkie. I sign up for a bunch of stuff just to see what happens on the other side. And the reason I'm doing that is because A, I want to learn, but also because it helps me grow and it challenges the way that I think for my own business. And then invariably or inevitably, I'll end up buying something that I didn't intend to buy because the follow-up was that damn good. And those are the ones that I take note of is what happened here? What got me to the point where I said, yeah, I do need this, and I'm willing to invest in it. So I think that the same thing is true for you guys, is just pay attention to how you interact with your inbox because the lessons are everywhere.
I remember when I was first learning about email marketing, and you often hear the advice of, like, use copy the magazines for your subject lines. Like, whatever the magazines put on their front cover that makes you think, oh, I'd like to buy that magazine, copy that structure, you know, 7 things to drive him wild in bed, or, you know, four secrets of, you know, healthy living. And I was like, oh, that's so cheesy, that 4 secrets of blah, blah, blah. And yet I found myself clicking on those things and reading those things all the time. You know, are you making this mistake in your, you know, in your marketing? I'm like, oh, great. Now I got to know. Right? I'm like, oh, that's interesting. It works. It really works. So notice exactly what Greg's saying. Notice what draws you in, what attracts you. Is it something mysterious? Is it something poetic? Is it something fun or sassy or strident or controversial? You know, you, whatever your personality is, whatever your take on the world is, lean into that, because that's what will help you stand out. And it will also help separate the people who are really into you and the people who are not into you. The people who are not into you should figure it out right away. This is one of the reasons why I send a bunch of emails right away, because I'm kind of an over-communicator. And if my emails are going to annoy you, you should unsubscribe right away. And God bless the unsubscribes.
Let's figure that out early on. Yeah.
Right? God bless the unsubscribes. Go. Find your people. I love you. Come back sometime, maybe. Whatever. Right? I used to take unsubscribe so personally. It was like a heartbreak every time somebody unsubscribed. Now I'm like, oh, thank God they left. That's great. Mm-hmm. I'd much rather talk to a room full of people that I adore, you know?
Right. Exactly. They're self-selecting. If you've got 1,000 people in a room and you've got a message to deliver, wouldn't you rather the people who don't want that message leave? Because if you say the same thing and they're still in that room, it's going to affect the way the other people hear it, right? It's going to affect the way that your list engages with your content. There's so many residual effects of having those people on your list. In fact, they'll probably grow to resent you, and they may even talk badly about your brand or about what it is that you do. I felt exactly the way you did, Sam, where it broke my heart when people unsubscribed, and it took me a while to understand that it wasn't personal, and now I've kind of come full circle, and I invite it. I'll send emails periodically that say, you know what, this is who I am and how I do things, and if that isn't for you, that's okay. Here's how you can stop receiving information from me. I want to go back to just briefly the subject lines that you talked about. I think people overcomplicate. If you look at nurture or marketing even, as just a subject or a term, it feels ambiguous. It feels shapeless. It feels kind of intimidating. And if you say I need to nurture, well, that's a loaded question with lots of facets, right? And it can be challenging to get anywhere if you just look at it that way. But if what you say is I need 3 emails, right? It becomes a little more tangible. And within those emails, you can break it down even further. I need a subject line and an opening line and a call to action and something of value, right? Or whatever the structure ends up being. But what I'm getting to is I think that people overthink their subject lines when its sole focus, the only point of the subject line, is to get them to open the email. And if you try to do too much in the subject line, if you try to pitch them or make an offer or compliment them, right? Actually, complimenting them might be a good move. But if you try to do too much, you're going to lose things. And so just keep your subject lines short, punchy, humorous, or intriguing. A lot of times they'll be truncated if people look at it on their phone. So try to front load the value, right? If you, rather than saying, the other day at the zoo, 7 kids were devoured by a hippopotamus, right? You lead with hippopotamus eats 7 kids, right? You kind of restructure that, knowing the way that they're going to consume it might affect the way that they receive the message. So,
and since pretty much everybody is only reading email on their phone these days, I'm not super into a lot of images. I tend to keep my stuff short sentences, one sentence paragraphs, lots of white space, because they're not reading it, right? They're looking at it. They look at it. If it looks like something they want to read, then they'll read it.
Yeah, there's an interesting fact about Sam and I. Maybe before we had ever spoken in real life, we developed simultaneous crushes on one another's copywriting. That was
true.
That was very much the one of our first interactions was Sam telling me she had a copy crush on me, and I had never heard that term and immediately reciprocated, because we had both been on one another's list and just had adored the writing style. And there's something to be said for that, right? I think that the reason is because it sounds like us. It reflects who we are, the way we like to talk, and that's something that does take a little bit of time to get comfortable with. I know a lot of people have a phone voice, you know, and you also may have an email voice. And so if it helps you, my trick was to spend time reading my emails out loud. I would write an email, and then I would read it out loud to just see, are these the words I would use, right? Because I use a lot of slang. I swear sometimes. There's some, intonations that don't translate as well. And so I wanted to read it and think, can people hear me? If they know me, can they hear it in my voice, you know?
And that's so important because really it's one of the really hard things with communicating via technology, whether it's on social media or on text or an email. It's very difficult to discern tone.
Mm.
It's hard to
yep.
tell. Like, sarcasm is almost impossible to do it via electronic writing. Like, it just comes off as mean, right? So this is why I use, like, a zillion emojis, especially in social media. Like, I'm like, heart, heart, smiley face, because I want people to know, like, I mean this in a light way. I mean this in a loving way. I mean this, you know, I feel like a
yeah.
nine-year-old girl. But it's what you need to do to help buoy the tone of things, because otherwise everything comes off really flat and hard. So take the time to play around with your tone. And Greg and I did not, you know, pop out of the womb able to do this. Like, it takes time to develop. It's a skill like anything else. We got – one of the questions we got a lot of was, what do I do if I haven't followed up with people for a long time?
Mm-hmm.
And I have some
yeah.
thoughts on this, but Greg, what do you think?
I think people respect honesty and transparency. And I would lead with that. I would say, hey, it's been a while. That's my bad. When we first connected, I had hoped that X, Y, and Z would happen. And clearly I've done none of those things. So let's reset some expectations. Here's what I'd like to do moving forward. Here's what I have for you. And if you're interested, check any of the boxes below for what you want to hear about, right? I think I also don't think you should beat yourself up. I think that's relatively common. We all have the best intentions when you collect information or when you get someone's email, and then a month turns into two, turns into three, and before you know it, you haven't talked to them. And there's something that you need to accept, that some of those people will have given up, will have moved on, will have found a different solution, and you should expect some attrition in terms of how many of those people reengage. But there are people in that audience who still want to hear from you and who will forgive you, and your relationship with them may be even stronger if you handle that with honesty and transparency.
Yeah, and I wouldn't even go that far. Honestly, I think most people haven't noticed how long it's been.
Mm.
They don't really care. They're not really
fair.
Paying attention.
Yeah,
you know? So I would just start. I would just dive in. I would just say, hi, here's the thing that, you know, I'm so looking forward to connecting with you. Now,
here's what I've been up to. Yeah.
Right. Here's what I've been up to, or here's a special thing I have for you, or whatever. Or I want to make sure you still want to hear from me. Click here to, you know, confirm. You know, if your list is cold, and by cold we mean you haven't emailed them in 3 months, you're probably going to want to do it in small batches or even individually, because otherwise you're going to get a ton of spam complaints, and it's going to be, you know, upsetting for everyone. There's another thing I want to say here, too, though, about segmentation. Because we got a couple questions about this too, like, oh, I've got different kinds of people on my list, or I've got people who are interested in two different things.
Hey, Sam?
Yeah.
Before you shift gears to segmentation, can I add
yeah.
something to the re-engagement conversation?
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
I mentioned that I do a little bit of Facebook advertising for my own business, and I don't know if this is a lever that anyone feels comfortable pulling for their business, but one move. Is if you have an audience that has gone cold or you haven't engaged with and it's been a while, you can upload that list to your Facebook business page as a custom audience, and then you can run a post or an ad and target that group specifically. So if you're worried about emailing them because it's been a while, or you don't want to get spam complaints, or it could affect your deliverability, or if you just want to do something extra, Facebook does have the ability to do a pretty targeted promotion just to those people. So you could spend $10 and run a little video that only goes to them saying, hey, I miss you, or look for this email from me. There are some really small batch things that you can do that take a little bit of technical comfort, but not a whole lot of budget, and can definitely multiply the engagement that you're able to get, or re-engagement at that point.
Absolutely, absolutely. And you can get them to re-opt in. We do this with what we call the zombies. Zombies are people mm-hmm. on your list who they haven't unsubscribed, but they also haven't really clicked or done anything for a while. So they're unengaged. So we can upload that list as well and just, you know, make them, you know, here's a free ebook or here's a free thing, and see if we can't get them to opt back in and get excited again about, you know, about being on the list.
Segmentation.
Let me check. Segmentation, yes, segmentation. So mostly, Yeah, Karen says, what if you haven't emailed your list in a year or more? How do you re-engage? It's become embarrassing now. Yeah, step over the embarrassing part. You know, just you've got valuable things to offer. Just do it. Just start fresh. No one noticed. No one cares. Like Greg says, don't beat yourself up about it. Just get going, because the best time to start building your list was 5 years ago. The second best is today, right? So
yeah.
Get to it. Diane says, how to go from free website info to content they pay for. The best way to do that is to have it be a really natural stepping stone, right? So the free content, so if you're offering, a package of 6 massages, or you're offering a course on how to write great emails, then you want the free thing to be the question that they're waking up with around that issue, right? So the free thing is what to do about your tight shoulders, or the free thing is how to write emails that don't annoy people, right? So you give them a little thin slice, you give them a little sample of something that's their question, that's on their mind, that reflects their understanding of the problem, and then you give them the free thing, you make sure they consume it, and then you say, look, if you like this, you know, if this was helpful to you, you might enjoy this six session package, or you might enjoy this course, or you might enjoy having a consultation with me. And I like to have a call to action in almost every email. I like to have people clicking and engaging in almost every email I can. Partly because I want to train them to click, right, so that they're used to clicking on my emails, so that they're used to interacting with me, so that when it comes time for them to buy something, that doesn't feel weird. It's also one of the ways that what we call the ISPs, the Internet Service Providers, which is like your Outlooks, your Gmails, your Hotmail, whatever, how they determine whether or not you're spam is how much people are interacting with your emails. Mm-hmm. Are they clicking? Are they putting them in a folder? Are they forwarding them? Are they deleting them? Are they responding to you? Are they writing you back? All that interaction counts for your, you know, either plus or minus on your spam score, basically. The more interaction people are doing, the better you are. And you guys don't have to worry about spamming, because you don't spam. You're not going to send emails to people who haven't requested stuff, and your content is great, you know. So spam isn't a big concern for you, but you might want to have people clicking more. But just have it be a really obvious stepping stone from the free thing to the paid thing to the next paid thing to the next paid thing. Like, have that be a really an arc that makes sense to them.
So, Sam, this is another reason why I think that unsubscribes can actually be good for you, right? Is if those people are on your list and they're just sitting around festering, growing resentful and curmudgeon-y about whatever it is that you do, it can hurt your deliverability. It can hurt your ability to get emails to people who actually want that content. If there's we're talking about if there are thousands and thousands of people who never open your content, right, and they just hate hearing from you, it doesn't serve you to have them on your list, right? It's not in your best interest to continue emailing them. It is much better to have a smaller, engaged audience. And so that's, from a technical perspective, an important thing to understand because it sort of informs the psychological place you need to be at with being okay with some people who might want to opt out.
Yeah. And, you know, you guys, if no one's complaining about your marketing, you're not doing enough marketing.
That's right.
Yeah, and if no one's complaining about your prices, you're not charging enough. So, you know, the minute you start to get some people who are like, I, you know, this is too much. Great. Good. Go away.
Hey, Sam, you sent me an email the other day with a bunch of the questions that had come in ahead of time, and there was a whole section about being pushy, about confidence issues, about not wanting to come across salesy. And the comment you made to me was, this isn't, I forget what you said. You said people are worried about this, but they're not salesy people. So, like, there was a disconnect between the concern
yeah.
and the people expressing that concern. Do you remember what you said?
Yeah. There was a ton of, these, you know. Where are they? How to overcome the thought that people are too busy and it's an imposition. I never know if they're being serious or just being nice if they tell me they want something. I need more confidence in marketing myself. How do I reach out without feeling pushy? How to do it in a non-sleazy, non-pushy way? How to follow up without sounding pesky or desperate, right? So, and what I said was, if pesky, desperate, pushy, and intrusive are not words that you hear about yourself regularly, you probably don't have to worry about that, right? People who are needy sound needy. People
right.
who are desperate sound desperate. People who are pushy sound pushy. Now, some people are pushy. You know, Suzanne Evans is super pushy. You know, my friend Orna is super pushy. And their copy reflects that. They're also loving and wise and great, but, you know, they're going to push your buttons because that's what they do. You know, Danielle Laporte used to have the Daily Whip. She'll whip you, right? but for most of you, you are sweet, kind, thoughtful, fairly intellectual people. You know, so you're not going to come off.
Set that concern aside.
Yeah, you can set that concern aside. If you're generally nice, then your stuff is going to come off as genuinely nice, you know? And if you misstep, then you misstep. Believe me, there's nothing better than making a mistake to really have the opportunity to show people who you are, right? If you send some, I did this one time. I sent something with a joke that I thought was a funny, funny joke, and it was super ham-fisted and inadvertently offensive, right?
Sure.
If I'm going to offend somebody, I want to do it on purpose. But it was inadvertently offensive, and I was mortified, absolutely mortified. I cried my eyes out. I drank a bottle of wine. I woke up the next morning, and sent out a very short, clear, heartfelt apology, you know, with an effort to make it right and the promise that I would never do it again. And I got more responses to that apology than almost anything I'd ever done. People wrote me back all over the place like, oh my gosh, it's okay, and we totally get it, and you're fine, and don't worry, and I do the same thing, and I don't know, I thought it was funny, and, you know, people were so sweet about it. So really, your mistakes are a tremendous opportunity.
And nobody gets it right the first time. You've got to find your voice and got to find the line, so to speak. I had a similar experience to what you're describing. I had a subject line that I intended in one way, and the recipient read it in a different way and took offense
mm-hmm.
to it and replied to me and told me so. And I just said, wow, I see how you heard it, and I need you to know this is how I meant it. But, like, it didn't occur to me that it could have been read that way, and I fixed it. You know, I changed it later that day, and this guy who was originally really upset with me, he kind of came full circle simply because I think because I listened. And he ended up becoming a member. He actually is no longer a member. He's moved on from Infusionsoft to a different platform. But he was with me for well over a year. And it was one of those relationships that were like, I think it was stronger because we both had that moment of like vulnerability at the beginning where he was like, no, you can't say this. And I said, whoa, I hear you. You're right. So I think that there's an opportunity there, and you may need to take a risk. You may need to put yourself out of your comfort zone. But you may be familiar. Sam, have you heard about? Are you familiar with the concept of like a trust depository or like a trust, balance, so to speak?
Mm.
It's pretty straightforward. But like, if you think about like a bank account, right? And you log in and check how much money you have in your account, and hopefully that number goes up, right? Well, with your audience or with your prospects, you have a trust account. You have a trust repository. And every time you do what you said you were going to do, you get to add something to your trust, right? That repository goes up. And then you get to spend that trust. And the way you spend it is by asking things of your audience, by saying, hey, I'm hosting this webinar. I think it will be valuable.